Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. At the time of death, according to the thinking, feeling, and willing of the mind, which is involved in fruitive activities, one receives a particular body. In other words, the body develops according to the activities of the mind. Changes of body are due to the flickering of the mind, for otherwise the soul could remain in its original spiritual body. Purport. One can very easily understand that the mind is constantly flickering, changing in the quality of its thinking, feeling, and willing. This is explained by Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita 6:34. Chanchalam hi mana Krishna pramati balavadridam tasyaham nigraham manye tayo eva sudushkaram. The mind is chanchala, flickering, and it changes very strongly. Therefore, Arjuna admitted that controlling the mind is not at all possible. This would be as difficult as controlling the wind. For example, if one were in a boat moving according to the wind on a river or the sea, and the wind were uncontrollable, the tilting boat would be very much disturbed and extremely difficult to control. It might even capsize. Therefore, in the Bhava Samudra, the ocean of mental speculation and transmigration to different types of bodies, one must first control the mind. By regulative practice, one can control the mind, and this is the purpose of the yoga system, Abhyasa Yoga Yuktena. But there is a chance of failure with the yoga system, especially in this age of Kali, because the yoga system uses artificial means. If the mind is engaged in bhakti yoga, however, by the grace of Krishna, one can very easily control it. Therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has recommended, Harinama, Harinama, Harinama Eva Kevalam. One should chant the holy name of the Lord constantly, for the holy name of the Lord is none different from Hari, the Supreme Person. By chanting the Hare Krishna mantra constantly, one can fix the mind on the lotus feet of Krishna, Savai Mana Krishna Pararavindayo, and in this way achieve the perfection of yoga. Otherwise, the flickering mind will hover on the platform of mental speculation for sense enjoyment, and one will have to transmigrate from one type of body to another because the mind is trained only in relation to the material elements, or in other words, to sense gratification, which is false. Maya Sukaya Baram Udvato Vahato Vimudhan. Bhagavatam 7.9.43. Rascals, Vimudhan, being controlled by mental speculation, make huge arrangements by which to enjoy life temporarily, but they must give up the body at the time of death, when everything is taken away by Krishna's external energy, mrityu sarva harascham. At that time, whatever one has created in this life is lost, and one must automatically accept a new body by the force of material nature. In this life, one may have constructed a very tall skyscraper, but in the next life, because of one's mentality, one may have to accept a body like that of a cat, a dog, a tree, or perhaps a demigod. Thus, the body is offered by the laws of material nature. Karanam guru sangosya sadasadyo na janmashu. Bhagavad Gita 13.22. The spirit soul takes birth in higher and lower species of life only because of his association with the three qualities of material nature. Rudvam gachanti sattvashta madye tishnanti rajasaha. Jaghanya guna vritasta adho gachanti tamasaha. Those situated in the mode of goodness gradually go upward to the higher planets. Those in the mode of passion live on the earthly planets, and those in the mode of ignorance go down to the hellish worlds. Bhagavad Gita 14.18. In conclusion, the Krishna consciousness movement offers the topmost welfare activity for human society. The saner section of human society must therefore take this movement very seriously for the benefit of all humanity. To save oneself from the repetition of birth and death, one must purify his consciousness. Sarvo padi vinirmuktam tatparaptena nirmalam. One must be freed from all designations. I am American, I am Indian, I am this, I am that. And come to the platform of understanding that Krishna is the original master and we are his eternal servants. When the senses are purified and engaged in Krishna's service, one achieves the highest perfection. Hrishikena Hrishikesha Sevanam Bhakti Ruchate. The Krishna consciousness movement is a movement of bhakti yoga, Vairagya Vidya Nija Bhakti Yoga. By following the principles of this movement, one becomes disassociated from material mental concoction and is established on the original platform of the eternal relationship between the living entity and the Supreme Personality of Godhead as servant and master. This, in summary, is the purpose of the Krishna Consciousness Movement. Jai Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Om Agyana Timirandasyaganam Dina Shalakaya Chakshuran Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Makam Kuroti Vachalam Pangam Mangare Shikrimya Kripata Mahambandhi Shri Gurum Dina Talanam Parvananda Madhavam Namam Shri Padaya Krishma Shabdari Shimati Bhakti Vedan Swamis Name Namaste Sajati Devi Gauramani Pichani Nivishesha Shani Vali Pashyachi Shani Namam Vishnu Padaya Krishma Shtabhadare Shmati Indra Juna Samnit Namane Namo Prabhupad Priyada Saya Jagannath Chataranda Motai Matsukaya Krishma Kirtanina Narasinghena Rakshitaya Namo Namaha Narayanam Namaskitya Naram Chaiva Narottam Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam Tathajaya Madhira Nasta Praishu Bhadreshu Nityam Bhagavati Sevya Bhagavati Uttama Shloki Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtiki. At the time of death, according to the thinking, feeling, and willing of the mind, which is involved in fruitive activities, one receives a particular body. In other words, the body develops according to the activities of the mind. Changes of body are due to the flickering of the mind, for otherwise the soul could remain in the original, in its original spiritual body. So, Hare Krishna. This is one of those ideal verses to speak on, because in the purport, Prabhupada just gives everything, right? The whole of Krishna consciousness, the whole basis of the Krishna consciousness philosophy is here in the purport. Any purport where Prabhupada ends in conclusion, the Krishna consciousness movement, then you know that everything is there, right? He's speaking, he's giving the sum and substance of the whole of Krishna consciousness in one purport. Because, you know, Prabhupada's idea was that somebody might pick up a book, any one of these books, and they might only read one page, right? They might only read one purport. So he condensed the whole philosophy of Krishna consciousness into each and every purport. What? I don't know about you, ladies and gentlemen, but the first thing that strikes me about this particular verse is the... Right, this is Vasudeva speaking. Right, we know where we are, right? This is Vasudeva speaking on the chariot. So he's just got married. He's taking his wife home for the first time. His brother-in-law, his new brother-in-law, is driving the chariot. There's been a voice from the sky telling Kamsa that the eighth child of his sister will kill him. So Kamsa's grabbed her by the hair, pulled out a sword, and he's just about to kill her. Right? And Vasudev starts speaking this transcendental knowledge, right? So that was his first recourse. So Vasudev is also a Kshatriya, right? He's just got married, probably had a sword with him, right? He could have fought, right? He could have attacked Kamsa, he could have jumped to Devaki's defense, he could have used violence to try and resolve the situation, but he didn't. His first recourse was, okay, how can I get out of this situation? Let me try and convince Kamsa by using his intelligence, right? So even in such an extreme situation, because his mind is under control, his first thought is Atmatattva, right? Speaking transcendental knowledge. So he tries to convince Kamsa with transcendental knowledge rather than by using force. And in the end, Kamsa doesn't actually accept the transcendental knowledge which Vasudeva is speaking, so Vasudeva has to offer his own children to Kamsa, right, to save the life of his wife. So, I don't know if we can imagine, we can put ourselves in Vasudeva's situation. I'm not sure that would be my first thought, would be to speak transcendental knowledge to someone who is trying to murder my wife. I think probably my first thought would be something physical, right? Jump to her defense, try and use force to save the situation. So Vasudev is a person of extremely high character. Because the first thing on his mind is transcendental knowledge, all right? Now, I can relate very strongly to this particular purport. In the purport, Srila Prabhupada starts speaking about the yoga system, right? Saying the yoga system is designed to control the mind. But Prabhupada says that the yoga system controls the mind by artificial means, right? So those artificial means were pranayama. Basically, pranayama is the part of the yoga process which pacifies the mind. I don't know if anyone, has anyone ever practiced yoga? Any hatha yogis here? Yeah? One or two of you? So I used to do it myself. I used to practice hatha yoga. I used to sit there chanting om for long periods of time. And it does. If you practice pranayama, the body becomes more peaceful, the mind becomes more peaceful. You feel pacified, right? But as Prabhupada points out, there is a chance of failure with the yoga system, especially in the age of Kali, because the yoga system uses artificial means, right? So myself, I used to be very attached to this. I used to be really attached to the yoga process, right? Hatha yoga, I used to be really into it. It was, for me, when I first started associating with devotees, it was a real dichotomy for me. Should I carry on with this hatha yoga? Should I carry on practicing this yoga path? Or should I take up what the devotees are telling me I should do, chanting Hare Krishna, right? It was a real dichotomy for me. I was really in two minds about it. I used to try and perform austerities, right? I used to, one time I went out into the woods. There's not much of a forest nowadays, right? But yogis are supposed to go out into the forest to practice austerities and, you know, control their minds, right? So I went out into the woods at night, and I was trying to do yoga. You know, I was trying to meditate. And there was like mosquitoes buzzing around, and I was trying to tolerate the mosquitoes. They were landing on my face, biting me, and I was trying to tolerate. No, I'm just going to sit here and, you know, meditate. I'm going to tolerate the body, tolerate the mind. And I don't know how long I lasted, maybe half an hour or something like that. Before I had to say, okay, forget this, I'm going home, right? I'm going to go home and have something to eat. So so I didn't get any mystic powers from doing that. But, you know, when I met devotees, when I first actually spoke to devotees, really, about, you know, philosophy, I was kind of putting my point of view that, about this yoga, what about this hatha yoga process. And the devotees told me, this was at South London Temple where I first actually spoke to devotees, and the devotee said, the yoga process that you're following comes from the Vedas, right? So I say, okay. He said, but the Vedas in this age, they recommend a different process. They recommend Harinam, right? Harinam, Harinam, Harinam Eva Kevalam. So you're following a Vedic process, but the Vedic scriptures that you're following, they recommend this process of Kirtan, right? So it's simple logic, but on that basis, I had to accept, actually, this is what the scriptures are telling, right? Because I knew yoga worked. I had experience that yoga, you know, it was powerful. But, you know, this is Kali Yuga, right? So even if you can find a forest, you can't go out into the forest. Probably you'd be in the forest for a few days and then someone's going to come down and cut all the trees down. So in this age, we need congregation, right? We need association. We need support to practice spiritual life. There's very few of us who can who can go out there on our own and, you know, practice spiritual life, control our minds, control our senses, rise above the modes alone. We need association, we need support, we need... So Prabhupada established all this, right? He established temples so that we could associate with devotees. He wrote books so that we could, you know, fill our minds with transcendental knowledge. Because it's not always easy to get the association of transcendental individuals, right? As soon as you walk outside of here, you're just in the Bhava Samudra, as Prabhupada calls it here, right? You're in the ocean, the material ocean. So bhakti yoga is this direct process, right? So Prabhupada's saying yoga, this is uses artificial means, because yoga, you're using an artificial process to try and link with the Supreme, but bhakti, as we know, is the direct linking process, right? It's simple. there's yourself, there's Krishna. Krishna is the supreme. You're the servant, and you link with Krishna by service. And it's as simple as that. So you simply engage yourself in Krishna's service, and that's yoga. All right? You are yoked to Krishna as soon as you begin performing devotional service, specifically by chanting the holy name. So I know we're all very familiar with the verse. Prabhupada's quoting here. Harinam, Harinam, Harinam Eva Kevalam. I just wanted to read that section of Chaitanya Charitamrita because it's really nice. So this is Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Leela, chapter 17. Harinama, Harinama, Harinama Eva Kevalam, Kalo Nasjeva, 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 Gatiranyata. In this age of Kali, there is no other means for self-realization than chanting the holy name, chanting the holy name, chanting the holy name of Lord Hari. So it goes on. This is the next verse. In this age of Kali, the holy name of the Lord, the Hare Krishna Mahamantra, is the incarnation of Lord Krishna. Simply by chanting the holy name, one associates with the Lord directly. Anyone who does this is certainly delivered. This verse repeats the word Eva, certainly, three times for emphasis. And it is also three times, and it also repeats three times Harinam, the holy name of the Lord, just to make common people understand. So Prabhupada says in the purport, to emphasize something to an ordinary person, one may repeat it three times. Just as one might say, you must do this, you must do this, you must do this. Thus the Brihadaranyaka Purana repeatedly emphasizes the chanting of the holy name so that people may take it seriously and thus free themselves from the clutches of Maya. It is our practical experience in the Krishna consciousness movement all over the world that many millions of people are factually coming to the spiritual stage of life simply by chanting the Hare Krishna Mahamantra regularly according to the prescribed principles. Therefore, our request to all our students is that they daily chant at least 16 rounds of this Hare Nam Mahamantra offensively. Following the regulative principles, thus their success will be assured without a doubt. The use of the word Kevala only prohibits all other processes such as cultivation of knowledge, practice of mystic yoga, and performance of austerities and fruitive activities. Now what Prabhupada says in this purport is quite interesting. Prabhupada says, our Krishna consciousness movement stresses the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra only, whereas those who do not know the secret of success for this age of Kali unnecessarily indulge in the cultivation of knowledge, the practice of mystic yoga, or the performance of fruitive activities or useless austerities. They are simply wasting their time and misleading their followers. When we point this out very plainly to an audience, members of the opposing groups become angry at us. But according to the injunctions of the Shastras, we cannot make compromises with these so-called Gyanis, Yogis, Karmis, and Tapasvis. When they say they are as good as we are, we must say that only we are good and that they are not. This is not our obstinacy, it is the injunction of the Shastras. We must not deviate from the injunction of the Shastras. This is confirmed in the next verse of Chaitanya Charitamrita. Okay, this verse clearly states that anyone who accepts any other path cannot be delivered. Right, this is the next verse, 25. This verse clearly states that anyone who accepts any other path cannot be delivered. This is the reason for the triple repetition, nothing else, nothing else, nothing else, which emphasizes the real position, the real process of self-realization. Okay. So Krishnadas Kaviraj makes it quite clear what the process is. Prabhupada spoke very strongly, as there he says, we are good and they are bad, basically, right? Devotees. So you have to have a very strong kind of position to say something like that. Generally, if you say something like that, it might sound a bit fanatical. Like if you went out into the street and started telling people, we're good, you're bad, it wouldn't get a very good response from people. That's not like the recommended technique for book distribution, because you're going to come across sounding like a born-again Christian or something like that. Because that's what all religious people say, right? All religious people say is, like we're, Like we go on Harinam on Saturday night, and where we stop in Leicester Square, we're there chanting, and there's some group of born again Christians there, preaching, "You're going to hell! You're going to hell! You're going to hell!" There's a book table with some Muslims there with a book table, you know, selling the Qurans. So there's some Muslims there selling the Quran, preaching to people, trying to convince other people of their religion. And then there's us. And we're just chanting. Right? So this is our process. So actually one of the reasons why a lot of people like devotees is because they don't feel that we preach to them. They don't feel like we're not heavy-handed. We don't go up to people and say, "Yeah, you have to follow us. You have to believe this. We're good. We're bad." We don't say things like that publicly, right? We don't talk like that. We just go out. We chant. We do Harinam. We're nice to people. We like distribute prasadam, give books, all right? So people actually feel kind of positively inclined towards the devotees because we don't have that heavy-handed approach. So obviously now is Sankirtan Marathon. So this is one of those purports where you could speak about anything. You could take this purport, and if you had a particular axe to grind, you could use it to grind that particular axe. If you wanted to give a Sankirtan class, you could give a Sankirtan class. If you wanted to, if you had a particular agenda, you could use this purport to justify that particular agenda. I don't have a particular agenda, by the way. But as it's the book distribution marathon, we can all agree that book distribution is very important, and that Prabhupada emphasized book distribution very strongly. Prabhupada said, as we know, "If you love me, distribute my books," etc. There are so many quotes. But I don't know about yourselves, but I've seen a lot of devotees come, join the temple, be very enthusiastic distributing books. Like even if you hear the book distribution scores, most of the devotees who are distributing the most books are the bhaktas, young devotees, right? But where are the devotees who were distributing loads of books, you know, 30 years ago, 20 years ago, 10 years ago? Most of them are not actually distributing books anymore. So Srila Prabhupada talks in this purport about the development of sattva-gun. Right? Development of sattva-gun. So in order to lead a sattvic life, one has to engage in devotional service, one has to serve Krishna. But in order to serve Krishna in the long term, you have to engage in service which is according to your nature, right? As Chibhuvanath Prabhu used to say, it said, ISKCON is running on the enthusiasm of the first 3 years of enthusiasm of the new devotees, right? So devotees join, they get all fired up, they go out, they go on Sankirtan, rah, 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 right? And then they kind of disappear. So in order for the movement to really progress, to really develop, devotees have to be engaged in service long-term, something which actually is according to their needs, according to their nature, psychophysical makeup, right? So that means Vanashram Dharma, right? Vanashram Dharma means engaging yourself in service which is according to your nature for Krishna. So this is like this is the next step. So you can go out and distribute books, you can go on Harinam, do all these things. But when people join, there has to be something more than just, okay, now you go out and distribute books. Like I gave you a book, now you give someone else a book, now that person will give somebody else a book. So that will spread knowledge, that will give people sukriti, right? But what about the actual devotees? What about the people that actually join the movement, right? In the long term, they have to be engaged in some sort of service. So this is an area which, you know, Srila Prabhupada said 50% of my work is not yet done. So this is something that has to be developed in order to actually keep devotees, right? So that devotees aren't... Otherwise, you know, we've all experienced it. You live in the temple, you stay in the temple for some time, you do devotional service with enthusiasm, and then when you leave, you feel bereft. You feel disconnected from the spiritual path, because we kind of identify spiritual life as something that happens in the temple. Right? Spiritual life is what goes on in the temple, and out there is material life. So if here is spiritual and there's material, then we tend to only practice spiritual life when we're in the temple. And when we're out there, we just disappear into the modes. So that's the importance of like a Varnashram communities. Right? So the world out there is, I mean, I'm sure you've been out there. It's rubbish, right? It's like hell. And, you know, globally, it's not getting any better. And society's not going to improve. So, you know, the onus is on us to actually try and create a society within a society which actually fosters these kind of principles, right? Like, it's, you know, it's all very well talking about it. It's all very well telling other people about it. But if we're not actually doing it, then who is going to do it? Right? If we're not practicing, you know, really practicing, I mean, in the temple, devotees practice sadhana. But what comes after that? What's the next step? What happens when you're not that young preacher anymore, when you need to, you know, when you get married, when you have children? So, you know, at the moment, devotees are basically just at the mercy of the material energy. Once you get married, you have to find somewhere to live. You have to get a mortgage or rent, like everybody else, right? You know, modern society is designed in such a way that we're all bound to the banks, right? So like a kid goes to university, they study for 3 years, they come out with, you know, 40, 50,000 pounds of debt. So immediately they're in debt. Then if they want to get somewhere to live, you want to get a mortgage, you've got like another 300,000 pounds worth of debt, right? Just to get a roof over your head. So as soon as just to live in this world, you're completely bound to a system which does not have your best interests at heart, right? A system designed by, you know, greedy individuals for the benefit of those greedy individuals, right? And if we don't have a separate institution set up, if we don't have our own society which is separate from that, then we're just in the same boat as everybody else. Right? If there's like an economic collapse, you know, which happens periodically every 10 years or so, there's like a downturn, then we go down with everybody else because our financial base is the same as their financial base. Right? So we need to have our own financial base. That's why Srila Prabhupada said we should be self-sufficient. Right? To be self-sufficient means that you're not dependent on whatever's going on out there. So if the whole thing collapses, whether it's a recession or a depression or some sort of complete global economic meltdown, right, the devotees won't be subject to that. Right? Devotees will actually be able to live. Because Prabhupada said, your economic problems are what? Food. You need something to eat, you need a roof over your head, and you need some clothes. That's your economic problems. So, like all societies all over the world, those problems were solved very, very easily. Just in Europe, in Africa, in Asia, people solved those economic problems very simply. They would build their own house. Right? It might take you a couple of days. You build a house, and then you've got a house. Now we have to work for 40 years just to get a house. Right? You make your own clothes. You know, you grow some cotton plants, or you have some sheep. You shear the wool. You make some cloth. It's easy. Right? You grow your own food. You keep a cow. You grow some grains. That's it. Your economic problems are solved. Like a few hours work every day, and you can live. But out this society out there, you know, Kali Yuga civilization, I mean, it's such an illusion, the idea that what they call them labor-saving devices, right? Machines that are supposed to make our lives easier. But we're all bound to those machines now. We have to work, you know. We're working 8 hours a day, at least 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, spending hours, because our place of work is so far away from our place of dwelling. You spend like an hour or 2 hours getting to work and from work every day. You never get to see your family, right? The whole thing collapses because, you know, no one's happy. Dad's not happy, mum's not happy, the kids are not happy because they never get to see each other. So the thing is a mess, right? And if we don't have an alternative, a real viable alternative, then we also, you know, we're in the same boat as everybody else. So, personally, I think this is a very important aspect of the Krishna conscious movement that really needs to be developed. The world out there is so polluted. Everything is completely polluted. And, like Srila Prabhupada described it, the best offering is the offering where you've grown the food for Krishna, you've harvested the food for Krishna, you offer the food, you cook for Krishna, you offer it to Krishna, then this is pure, right? For example, when we buy dairy products, right? If you buy dairy products from the shop, you're directly funding the slaughter of millions and millions of cows. Right? Millions of cows every year are killed for the sake of the dairy industry, right? For that milk, for that cheese. If you want to go for a pizza, whatever it is, they're slaughtering millions of cows for leather, right? Devotees wear leather shoes. If you wear leather shoes, ladies, if you like handbags, all right? For example, like most of the leather in England, 70% of the leather which is purchased here comes from India, right? So that means, when you go to Vrindavan, you see the nice cows, Surabi cows wandering around. That's what those handbags and shoes are made of. They just round them up off the street. I don't know if any of you have seen the videos of them. If the cows don't want to walk, they rub chili powder into their eyes to make them run, to make them get into the lorries, trucks. There's a city in India called Kanpur, which is where a lot of their leather comes from. And it's on the banks of the Ganges, because to produce leather, you need lots of water. Right? And the Ganges around Kanpur is completely dead. It's a dead river. There's no life in it whatsoever. Unable to sustain life, because the amount of chemicals which are poured into the river, right? Because of this leather industry. Millions of cows every year killed. The river is completely destroyed. Now, in India, the highest rates of cancer are among people living along the banks of the Ganges. So you can imagine that in the whole world, this is the most auspicious place you could possibly live, is by the banks of the Ganges. Right? But now, the highest rates of cancer among people living on the banks of the Ganges because of all these chemicals, pollutants, being poured constantly, right? Undiluted sewage, everything just going into the river. So this Kali Yuga, right? Everything is spoiled. So the only thing we can do, we can talk about it, we can preach about it, but we need to also take our little piece of land, keep that pure, Avoid, for example, genetically modified crops, right? Who knows about, you've heard of Monsanto, right? So this company, Monsanto, they're the company that created napalm. Their goal is to be in control of all the world's food. And they're the company that produced napalm. In India, there's like an epidemic of cotton farmers committing suicide. Tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of cotton farmers in India have committed suicide because they've become bankrupt by using seeds, cotton seeds, genetically modified cotton seeds produced by Monsanto. The government of India took those seeds, and because they got loans from the IMF on the basis of introducing those seeds into India, the farmers were told that these genetically modified cotton seeds would increase their yields, but in fact those seeds require twice as much water to produce the crop as ordinary seeds, need twice as much water. So if you don't have enough water, your crops fail, and they're also subject to a blight, cotton blight, right, a bug. So hundreds of thousands of farmers lost everything. Everything. And, they just were unable to cope with that, and they just killed themselves. Tens of thousands of Indian cotton farmers have committed suicide in the last few years because of this greed, right? Rapacious greed of the corporations. Now, that's not about to change. Right? We're just going off to war now in Syria. Right? George Orwell. Anyone know, you know George Orwell? George Orwell said, he said, the wealthy said, the moneyed class. The moneyed class will only go to war, they will only invade another country if it will benefit them financially. There's no other reason. There's no other reason for one country to go to war against another one, unless it will benefit them financially. Right? So that's the mentality of a demon. Right? You have something, I want it. I have superior power, I'm just going to take it. All right? So, you know, the country's at war. Are we at war? We don't want to be at war, right? What we want to do, what I personally believe, and what Srila Prabhupada very regularly speaks about, is that we should separate ourselves from this nightmare that's going on out there. All right, when Srila Prabhupada established communities like New Vrindavan, for example, New Vrindavan was the first community Prabhupada established. When Prabhupada established New Vrindavan, his idea was that devotees, yeah, you preach in the cities, but then after that, after some period of preaching in the cities, you retire there. Not retire, but you know, you go and perform service there in New Vrindavan on the farm communities, and you live separately, completely separately from everything that's going on out there. And when devotees at New Vrindavan were continuing to go into the cities to distribute books, Prabhupada actually said, he said, yeah, they're not used to it yet. Right? In other words, the reason why devotees were going out to the cities was not because necessarily they're so attached to book distribution, but because they're actually habituated to a rajasic lifestyle, right? Not used to living in that kind of simple sattva-guna lifestyle. So it takes some time, some period of adjustment, right, to actually wean ourselves off that modern Ugra karmic civilization. We're also attached to it. All right, we've all got, you know, computers, phones. Everyone's got a phone. Who hasn't got a phone? Right? We've got cars. All right. As long as we're driving cars, we're also part of that whole global machine, right? Squeezing the oil out of the world, invading other countries which are oil rich. All right. We're also facilitating that because we buy the oil, we buy the petrol. All right. We're implicated in these things, and it's fine. Okay, if you're preaching, right, you do what has to be done. But actually, what we should really be doing, especially those of us, you know, if you're not a brahmachari, if you're not directly performing sankirtan, then we should really be striving to separate ourselves from everything that's going on out there. Because, it's hell. Anyway, Hare Krishna. I've ranted and raved enough. So I'll leave you alone to go and have your breakfast. Hare Krishna. Jai Jai Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.